The hour of 8:30 having arrived, I'm going to call to order state and local government operations, reform, technology, and elections, and I'm going to go down the list and we'll see which member is here. House file 938, Reiner. Not here. Senate file 723, Obermiller. Not here. House file 774, Knuth. I see no orange in the room, so not here. Senate file 423, Swales. Obermiller, where is he? There he is. Representative, you are up by virtue of being here.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Obermiller, I'm going to move that Senate file 237 be recommended to pass and be sent to the General Register.
That's great, Your Honor. Or, I'm sorry, sir. You know, I just got back from court yesterday, so I apologize. I'm back on the wrong track again. Mr. Chair, the Senate File 237 is a bill that authorizes and establishes a Fallen Firefighters Memorial Day. And the purpose of the bill, essentially, is to honor these brave men and women who die in the line of duty. There's already a national day to memorialize people who are, you know, good enough to the people of this nation to give their lives in the line of duty for firefighting. But there's some confusion, apparently, as to whether or not the flag should be flown at half-staff or not flown at half-staff when the national day is honored, but there's no state day coordinated at the same time. And so that's basically the purpose. This bill was brought to me at the request of an Eagan firefighter. I have a lot of respect for. His name is David Hammer. He basically really thought this was important. He was also involved in the firefighters' memorial issue with whether you could have the caskets on top of the fire trucks after we passed the law a couple years back about not allowing caskets to be displayed outside of a vehicle. So just would love your support on this. And Mr. Chair, I'm not even sure, unless there's some opposition, this may even be something for the consent calendar instead. But
Representative Bowman, I'm going to give you just a bit of advice. If you send it to the consent calendar, so we'll do a little quiz. How many names does it take, or how many votes does it take it off? And if it's taken off, then where does it go? And then how many more steps does it take to get back to where you want it?
There certainly are a lot more steps there. And so in the event someone was objected to it, it's fine. I'm happy to go to the General Register with
I think you would be happy with the motion of the chair.
That would be great for me.
I'm glad you agree. You have someone to testify? David Hammer, is he here?
He was planning to be here today. I'm just not sure if he's maybe running behind. He actually works at the Vet Center, so he should be here, but I apologize he's not made it today. But I do have his actual comments if you'd like to hear some more of the information he has.
First of all, are there any questions to the bill from members? Representative Gutwalk.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Obermiller, sounds like a great intention, good idea. Let's recognize the fallen firefighters. Are there any other ceremonies right now recognizing fallen firefighters? I know there's a ceremony that recognizes fallen police officers.
Representative Obermiller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Gutwalk, we do, in fact, this seems to be a narrow window of a narrow group of people who haven't been recognized the way we would like to be. There's actually a police officer's memorial, but we don't do the same for the firefighters. The purpose of this is basically to say, let's pick a time where we're going to make sure we honor these men and women who've died in the line of duty. And the date that we've chosen, the October, it's the first Sunday in October, corresponds to when the federal date would be for when the initial when the federal law, public law, was passed for the October date. So,
thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Obermiller, just out of curiosity, do you know how many fallen firefighters do we have in Minnesota?
Representative Obermiller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We have, I do have that information here. Just a second, please. Actually, I apologize. I guess I must have left that number in my office. There are 800 fire departments in Minnesota, with 10 have an honor guard that to honor the fallen members. But unfortunately, I don't have that specific number in front of me. I believe it's I want to say it's 187, if I remember from my numbers that have died since that they started keeping records back in about, I think it was what, 1881 or 1880 is when they started keeping records for line of duty deaths. It's 185 or 187.
Any further discussion to the bill? Anyone else wish to testify? He is not. Seeing none, I'll renew my motion that Senate File 237 be recommended to pass and be placed in the General Register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay? Motion prevails.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the
committee. Representative Canute, I thought I saw her. There she is. Representative Canute, welcome to the committee. I will move that House File 774 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Finance Committee. So, Representative Canute, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. House File 774 basically authorizes the Police and Control Agency to establish an emission reporting system and maintain an inventory of greenhouse gas emissions. And it has a few of the design characteristics we'd like to see, as well as some rulemaking authority. And just last month, the federal EPA has proposed a national mandatory greenhouse gas reporting system. But in speaking with the PCA, it sounds like they would also like this authority at the state level, because the national system doesn't cover all areas. They want to make sure they have the authority to do what they need to do to meet our goals and regulations under the Next Generation Energy Act that we passed in the last couple of years. And so it's a pretty straightforward bill, and it has a maximum amount. This bill has been worked on by several different groups, including the Minnesota Center for Environmental Advocacy. The PCA has been consulted on it in developing this language, and then we've worked with the Chamber, and they support the Senate version. The Chamber supports the Senate version. There's a couple of changes that I've made that I think are important, including the range of reporting thresholds of 10,000 tons to 25,000 tons. The 25,000 tons is actually the federal federal language, and we allow them to go a little lower, but we don't want them to go too low, because we don't want certain small businesses caught in this reporting that we don't necessarily need the information from. And then it also asks the PCA to look at reporting of emissions from the transportation sector, from transportation fuels, and we think that's an important process to keep moving ahead on. If they can't figure out how to do it right away, we have to get we require them to give us some information about why they can't do it and how they can maybe do that going forward. And then the rulemaking authority allows them to make sure the process goes well and doesn't get challenged in certain ways. And I have Allison Wolf from the Center for Environmental Advocacy here to testify, and Frank Kolasch from the PCA, who does their emission.
All right, this isn't the Environment Committee, though.
Okay.
We're primarily interested in the rulemaking authority of the bill. So if your witness wishes to testify to the rulemaking authority, welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Allison Wolf. I'm with the Minnesota Center for Environmental Advocacy, and I will speak just to the rulemaking issue, and this seems to be a perfect area for rulemaking. The federal rule on mandatory emissions reporting is 1,400 pages long. I think that gives you some sense of its technical complexity. And the PCA is faced with a task of trying to fit into that system and figure out where the state can productively seek information. It's not entirely clear that the state will receive information from the federal reporting system in a way that, in a manner and a form that it can use productively. So that's one issue. This is also just a very highly technical area. Every industry sort of needs its own particular type of reporting, and emissions differ dramatically depending on whether you're talking about stationary sources or leakage rates from various kinds of industrial sources. So it is an area where technical expertise is very much needed, and I think if we were to have a bill on this at the legislative level, it would be quite lengthy. So I think this is a perfect area where rulemaking can step in, and the expertise of the PCA will be valuable in that
right.
regard.
Ms. Wolf, you just testified that the rulemaking at the federal level is 1,400 pages. How many pages would you anticipate it would be at the state level?
Mr. Chairman, that is not something I would want to speculate on. I believe that the Pollution Control Agency has staff here who may want to talk to that, but I imagine the answer is probably, you know, determining that at this point is not possible.
All right. If we have someone from the agency here to the rulemaking, welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Frank Kolash. I'm manager of the Air Assessment and Environmental Data Management section at the Pollution Control Agency. Within this section is the operation of our emission inventories for a number of different pollutants, and including the staff that will be developing any state rule that we need to implement this bill or the federal bill. The federal proposed rule, the actual rule language is on the order of 800 pages. Compare that to the length of our rules for other pollutants that are on the order of somewhere between 7 pages to a dozen pages. The primary difference comes in the coverage of the types of facilities that are covered by our rule, and then the general use of methodology and calculations that we use in a smaller rule, and the more prescriptive and much more voluminous description that the EPA has used in their proposed rule. We don't anticipate that we would need an 800-page rule to describe this, because we would be able to incorporate by reference either the federal rule that is available to us or other reporting or calculation methodologies that exist at either the climate registry, that level, or other state regional types of registries and greenhouse gas calculations.
Right. Mr. Cole, do you anticipate that the agency would absorb these costs of rulemaking? I know it's going to finance anyway, but can you tell us, is this something that you would need extra revenue for?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. At this point, we have, within the fiscal note, identified that for the staff costs, we would absorb the staffing necessary to do the rulemaking for this. There would be, at this point, potential additional costs for data management systems. The fiscal note includes the use of a shared system through the climate registry. Within our proposed budget, there's also money for the development of a more comprehensive emissions inventory data management system that would allow us to either collect the data at the state level, transfer that to the federal reporting agency, EPA, or to accept the data that's reported to the federal agency and have a way to store that, manage it, and analyze it at the state level.
Representative Gobble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Knuth, if you're familiar with Section 216H.11, you're amending here, or adding to Section 216H in the law with this bill. We already have a reporting system for a number of these kinds of emissions, and it also references under Subdivision 3 in that legislation that with the approval of the commissioner, this section may be satisfied by filing with the commissioner a copy of greenhouse gas emissions reported, a report filed with a federal agency. So what I'm trying to figure out is, what are we doing in addition to what's already being done in state law? How is this an improvement over what we're already doing? Maybe Mr. Kolash could also respond to that. We're already saying if you're filing reports on these emissions with the federal government, that can satisfy this. So why do we need to do all of this?
Representative Knuth or Mr. Kolash?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Gottwald. The question that you asked, and I believe that the part of the statute that you cite is actually focused on the reporting of purchases of high global warming potential chemicals. And we do accept a petition for an alternative reporting methodology to the commissioner if that's reported someplace else. And for example, utilities report that information to the Department of Energy. We accept that form. As far as the duplication with the federal rule, that would be one area within our own rulemaking we would be very cognizant of, ensuring that we do not create duplicate reporting mechanisms with the federal rule. But as we analyze the federal rule, we do see that there are particular emissions and particular facilities, particular sectors that we may need to have more information about because of the way that the federal rule is structured. Certain sectors, certain facilities may be missed, and they would be on a federal level, they are not of the highest importance. At the state level, they are important to us to understand. We also actively work with the Climate Registry, which at this point is a voluntary system for facilities to report to there, and we anticipate that we would be able to transfer data between those systems and our systems. We also work with other of the model rural initiatives that are going on with the Western Climate Initiative, the Minnesota Governors Association, of course, that focuses on how we would report this. One of the major comment pieces that the EPA is looking for on their current proposed rule is whether or not they should delegate the authority grant that they develop in the federal rule to the states. For a number of other pollutants, we have that authority and we conduct those emission inventories at the state level, delegated to us from EPA. When they proposed the initial rule, they said they would take care of that, but they're also taking comment on whether or not they should delegate that to the state, because there is substantial overlap on the facilities that would have to report at a state level across the country and also then at the federal level.
Representative Gallo.
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Knuth, Mr. Kolesch, it seems to me if we haven't yet figured out how the federal government is either going to hand off the rulemaking authority to Minnesota or not, this might even be a bit preemptive or presumptuous. I also get concerned about this being another fishing expedition. This is an opportunity for us to gather more information in our own way about various things that aren't currently in state law. I respect the right to bring it forward, but in addition to the chair's concerns about the complexity and cost of doing rulemaking and how the federal decisions might impact that, we're not a finance committee. There is significant cost to that. But just concerned about this being a fishing expedition. I know Representative Knuth testified that the chamber was okay with some language in this bill that's been worked out, but Representative Knuth, are they supportive of this? Are they supporting this bill?
Representative Knuth.
Mr. Chair, Representative Gottwald, they are supporting the general idea of greenhouse gas emissions reporting. I amended some specifics in that, and they're not, from what I understand, they like the Senate version more than the House version. And but I'm not sure exactly which things they want to take out of the bill in its current form, but they do, I'm looking into the audience, they do support a general idea of a greenhouse gas emissions reporting system. I don't want to speak on exactly what issues they have with that, with this bill in its current form.
Mr. Chair, I believe the Minnesota Chamber representatives are here. There is someone here from Minnesota Chamber. Perhaps we could hear from them.
They are coming now. Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, good morning. My name is Tony Kulis. I'm representing the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. As Representative Knuth has pointed out, the Minnesota Chamber does support greenhouse gas emission reporting. But what we're looking for, Mr. Chairman, has been pointed out, it's a 500-page rule that the Feds just published in the Federal Register. It's out for a 60-day comment period right now. It's a 500-page rule with an 800-page preamble. So we're trying to pick through that right now to see what we've got going. That rule, as we understand it right now, is going to cover about 85 to 90% of the emissions in about 13,000 facilities. So our concern, and we agree with Representative Knuth that there needs to be greenhouse gas emissions reporting. Where we kind of part ways with her is how prescriptive we get, Mr. Chairman, in the rulemaking area. And that happens right around, if you're looking at the bill, line 1.20 was the amendment that gets a little bit prescriptive on the number of tons and includes the transportation, greenhouse gas emissions, and natural gas. Mr. Chairman, what our concern is that we just would like to see and allow the PCA to be a little bit flexible as we pick through this 1,300-page document that the Feds have published out, and so that we don't get a little bit different. We have a number of our members that conduct business internationally as well as nationally, and what we don't want to have is a patchwork of rules and regulations and reporting emissions across the nation. So we'd like to see some consistency as we pick through this federal deal and allow the PCA some flexibility as they move forward on this rule.
Representative Gubbaugh, to the witness.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To Representative Knuth, since we've already heard testimony here that suggests, this may be preemptive, we'd like to follow whatever the federal government is doing so we don't end up crossing over things, duplicating things. What is the intent of the specificity in the language that you're bringing forward? What are we doing with this information? What is it helping us accomplish?
Representative Knudsen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Gottwald. The more prescriptive part is putting in a number for the threshold, the 10,000 tons to 25,000 tons. Currently, the federal rule has 25,000 tons, and so I don't think we want to be going higher than that in our state rule to make sure that we come in line with that. But the PCA does want the opportunity to go lower in certain areas if they determine that makes more sense in Minnesota. But we also don't want them to go too low and bring in groups that don't really need to be reporting and able to, in order to get the benefits of this. We also asked the PCA to look at natural gas combustion as well as transportation fuels. We don't say that they have to do it, but this is an area where it hasn't really been figured out completely. There still needs to be more work done. In order to really meet our greenhouse gas emission reduction goals, we need to make progress in this area. And so I think having information about saying you have to look at including it, and if you determine that it's not possible, then we need to know why, and we need to know steps we can take to make it possible. It's trying to get some better information in an area that, from what I've learned in going through this process, is an area that it's not really an easy thing to do. And so the transportation fuels is included some ways in the federal rules, but not in others. And I think just requiring that we look at this and try and take some steps to figure it out, I think, is important. So that's where it's more. We also require that the data is kept on file for a minimum of 5 years. That's standard with the Clean Air Act and what they collect for the federal Clean Air Act. And so I think that's not surprising. I just want to make sure if they report that they have, we can go back and look at the data if necessary for a minimum of 5 years.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Knuth, you've raised actually a new concern for me now. Under Section 2.5, Section C of the bill, under Subdivision 2, now we're talking about natural gas combustion, natural gas emissions, and while I guess I would agree we want to focus on that for greenhouse gas emission control eventually, you just mentioned there are difficulties and concerns about this area, that it's not completely fleshed out, that we don't know exactly what we want to do here, and now we're trying to put into statute something beyond what the federal government is asking of us, and beyond, you mentioned yourself, this is difficult to measure. So I have a concern around that. Furthermore, I mean, as we ask for more of this data, I think it's very important for us as a committee and as a legislature to know what are we doing with this information. As we ask for more and more of it, what is being done with it? That was my question a moment ago, and I appreciate an answer. Thank you.
President Kinnear.
Mr. Chair, Representative Gottwald, the first part of your statement, you said, you know, if it's difficult to do, you know, why are we doing it? That's why we're asking for it, and we're saying if you can't do it, tell us why and help us figure out how to do it. We know that it's not going to be perfectly obvious right away, but I think something being harder to do doesn't mean we shouldn't be taking steps to do it. And I think that my bill does that, and it makes progress, but it doesn't dictate certain ends if we can't quite get there. It just asks our agency to make that part of the process. In terms of what we do with this emissions reporting, we have goals and statute of greenhouse gas emissions reductions, and if we can't measure that well, we can't reduce it in the ways that we're wanting to do. We've put into statute and goals we put into statute in this state. Right now we have pretty good inventories, but they're based on models, they're based on looking at different sources of data, but they're not based on who's actually emitting these sources or who's responsible for putting them out. But we have a good sense of kind of what there is. That's more of an inventory. What we want is a reporting system so we know who's doing what, and we can make sure that we're making progress towards reducing greenhouse gas emissions.
Representative Gottwald, then I'm going to move on.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I would just point out that I mean a lot of this is preemptive. We're putting it in statute before we can actually do it, and that concerns me quite a bit. I think it has some concern among the business community. I think the chambers alluded to that as well. And I think we need to be very careful when we do these kinds of things, both ahead of the major federal rulemaking and how that's going to match up with the states, as well as asking people to do things we already know they'd have a difficult time doing, and then asking for reports back to the legislature so they can figure out how to tell them how to do it properly or how to get the information correctly. It just seems a little bit cart before the horse.
Representative Lang.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question for Mr. Kolesch, if he would return. My question is, does the PCA currently have authorization under any other statute to establish a system and to establish rules?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Kolesch. The agency believes that we do have, under our general rulemaking authority, the authority to conduct this rulemaking. We anticipate that with sometime in April that the EPA will make a declaration that will regulate greenhouse gases under the Clean Air Act, which then further clarifies our authority to do rulemaking. We are authorized as a state to conduct the Clean Air Act and to implement the Clean Air Act in Minnesota.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Kolesch, so the way I understand your response is that even without this legislation, the agency could establish a system and could adopt rules.
Mr. Kolesch, thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Lanning, yes, we believe that as the regulation of greenhouse gas comes to the forefront under the Clean Air Act, as was determined in a Supreme Court case 2 years ago, that the authority that we have to implement the Clean Air Act in Minnesota would extend to greenhouse gases. The bill in front of you would clarify that authority and would avoid any administrative challenges or slowdowns that we would have as we do any anticipated rulemaking based on whether or not we have clear authority to regulate or do emissions inventory for greenhouse gases in Minnesota.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, in effect, I don't understand why we need this when the authority is already there. And what I'm bothered about is that this bill requires the agency to do it, but it says the agency may adopt rules. If we're going to establish a system, wouldn't it seem to me that you absolutely would need to have rules? And wouldn't it make more sense for those rules to be developed after we know what the feds are going to do? And so I really have a problem with that. Representative Knuth, you in your opening statement said that this bill authorizes the agency, but the bill itself requires the agency. It says the agency shall establish this system. So I'm troubled by that. Authorizing is one thing, requiring it is another. It seems to me. The other question I have has to do, Mr. Kolesch, with if rules are adopted at some point along the way, with or without this bill, what is the process for challenging those rules if those rules prove to be problematic or cause hardship in any way?
Mr. Kolesch first, and then we'll go to Rep. Duncan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Lanning. Within the Administrative Procedures Act, we would have numerous opportunities for comment on the agency's proposals for rulemaking. We anticipate that this rulemaking would go to a hearing in front of an administrative law judge to hear any substantive comments or challenges to the rule. And the rulemaking is part of the Minnesota Climate Change Advisory Group. Excuse me, let me clarify that. The intent to track emissions, create a greenhouse gas emission inventory as part of the Minnesota Climate Change Advisory Group's recommendations. It's essential to reporting on the current statutory goals for greenhouse gas reductions in the state. So while we anticipate that there would be a fair amount of discussion based on the exact mechanics of how we put forth the reporting system, the calculation system, the coverage that the rule would create, the Administrative Procedures Act would provide numerous opportunities for comment. It would likely go to a hearing in front of an administrative law judge. Once they are passed, the Administrative Procedures Act does have a stop at the governor's office before they're adopted, and then there is the potential for court challenge once they're adopted by the state.
Representative, did you want to respond to Representative Lanning's comment on the intent of your bill?
Mr. Chair, Representative Lanning, the intent of the bill is to make sure that the PCA does have the rulemaking authority, and so there won't be challenges to that. There may or may not be. And I do think we need to be moving forward on an emissions reporting system in the state of Minnesota, and the legislature, rightly so, has... we don't say a lot about that and what it is. We put a little bit in terms of the range of threshold. We say we need to be looking at some areas that we know need to be part of the solution, but we may not know how to do. We want more information about how to do that. And so those are kind of the major intent. We want to make sure that they have this authority without any question, and make sure certain legislative priorities are also part of that process.
Representative Bitson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Canusier's statement, we need to be moving forward on a reporting system, I think is one that's already been determined by the federal government, and we are moving forward with or without this piece of legislation. Mr. Kolesch, I do have a question to you. We sometimes in committee hearings hear broad statements being thrown out with no backing. I just want to know, for instance, you said that there are areas that we deem important, but the feds may not. Right? I'm assuming then you've read the, I'm not quite sure anymore, Mr. Chair, if it's 1,400 pages, 800 pages, 500 pages, 1,300 pages. I've heard all of those thrown out. If you've read all of them and you have a for instance, could you share it with us? What area does the feds not deem important that we need to write rules to?
Mr. Kolesch.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Benson. As far as the size of the rule, it all depends on which version you're looking at, if you have the double space version, the Federal Register version. So, but it is a substantial rulemaking, and they use a consistent process to go through every sector that they cover. The for example that the agency has looked at, some of the ideas, the sectors that the staff has looked at, one would be the threshold is 25,000 metric tons per year of carbon dioxide equivalents emitted. There's the potential that some natural gas facilities in the state that are smaller would not meet that reporting threshold, but because they're electric generating units, we would want to know about their greenhouse gas emissions. We would want to have some authority to capture that information because that's very important to the Next Generation Energy Act of 2007 and the reporting goals from there. Other areas within the for sources in Minnesota that we think would be important for us to have a comprehensive understanding of greenhouse gas emissions would be to work within the other agencies and the other operators of the state for emissions from prescribed burning. That's not a standard stationary source, but it is an important source of air pollution in Minnesota because of the extent of prescribed burning that we have throughout the state. It affects both conventional air pollutants plus greenhouse gas and pollutants. And then also natural gas distribution transmission, that the federal rule does not cover the actual movement of natural gas throughout the state and leakages and any emissions from that system. They primarily focus on the generators and the generators of electricity using natural gas.
Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One final issue, Representative Knuson. You know, Part C on page 2.5 and beyond, you've already testified that this is not well understood at this time. I'm going to go down to lines 2.12 and 2.13, where you state if the commissioner decides that transportation, fuel, and portions of natural gas should not be included. And now, Representative Knuth, I'm going to go to the other end. If the commissioner on their own accord decide that it should be included, Can the legislature weigh in on that? Can we hear about that in open testimony here at the legislature? Or does lines 2.21 and 2.22 give the commissioner the right then to unilaterally make that decision and then write rules towards that decision?
Representative
Mr. Chair, Representative Biskins, having worked on greenhouse gas emissions and greenhouse gas emission reductions, I'm sure that would be part of the administrative process of rulemaking, and I'm sure there would be outside groups weighing in into that process. And so what I'm saying is they have to look at it, and it has to be discussed in that process that they make these decisions, because it's transportation fuels and natural gas combustion are a big part of the problem. But I trust the rulemaking process that there will be public input and public involvement. If chairs of committees decided to have hearings on these issues, I'm sure that that would be welcome as well from the agency. But I'm not worried about this just happening without anyone being aware of it or being involved in the public process, whether it's the legislature or the rulemaking process.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess, Mr. Chair, just from a general philosophy, I more greatly trust the legislative process, as the people who sit around the table are actually elected representatives of the people they seek to impose law on. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Right. Representative Cox.
Well, Mr. Chairman and members, the first thing is I want to correct Representative Gottwald, who's misuse of the word preemptive. The state never preempts the federal government. Preemption is used when the federal government preempts the state from acting, and that specifically was not done in this bill. Also want to point out, famous Supreme Court Justice Holmes pointed out that the states are most useful as the laboratories of democracy, and so it is appropriate to have states going in different directions than the federal government, or expanding the direction of the federal government. And then I'll finally point out that this bill is before us because of one word in it, that it says that the Pollution Control Agency may adopt rules. And so I looked at that, I drew a circle around that section, and I looked to see from the time that I chaired this committee, one of the things that we worked on in the rules adoption was that the rules were very specific and very related to a specific subject. And I noted specifically, so I checked it off as okay, that it was for the purposes of this section. My hackles got raised a little bit when Mr. Kolosh talked about the general rulemaking authority of the department, and I think we might look at that, because every time general rulemaking department not specifically listed to a subject came before us, we tried to get rid of it. From what he said, it seemed to be that it was probably pretty restrained to begin with. But there was previously many bills had signs like, you know, the Department of Health may adopt rules, you know, for any issue dealing with health or something like that. And so we tried to get rid of that. So as I look at this, the Environment Committee has already decided all of the things that we're asking about, and I believe that the rulemaking is well written and within the purview of this committee, and I think we should just pass the bill.
Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Just a quick question for Representative Knuth. In light of the testimony today regarding the federal rulemaking process and the 30-day comment period that's in progress, would you see any value in at the least awaiting on your bill to see how all that the federal rulemaking process shakes out before moving ahead with your bill?
Representative,
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, I think from my discussions with the agency, I think it would be useful for them to have this authority alongside looking at the federal rule. And, you know, the bill talks about, the commissioner, according to the bill lines 1.14 to 1.18, the commissioner shall, to the extent practicable, design the system to coordinate with other regional and federal greenhouse gas emissions and emissions reporting and inventory systems. And, you know, it allows for use of common forms and sharing of information, common facility systems and databases. So I think developing the state and the federal systems together and having the state complement the federal system in ways that our agency thinks make sense for Minnesota is very useful. I think that would be a helpful thing for the agency to have as it's working on figuring out the federal reporting.
Representative Gullo.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, Representative Kahn, thank you for the lesson in rulemaking and the definition from the Dictionary of Preemptive. I think the term that was more germane was putting the cart before the horse. I think, as you pointed out, this bill seeks to put into our law and direct the state PCA in terms of rulemaking in a way that gets ahead of the federal government doing some of the very same things. With all due respect to what Representative Kahn just said about somehow marrying these up, we're putting in law and asking the state to do things that may in fact be duplicative, that may in fact be crosswise with whatever the federal government comes up with. The point is, can we have the federal government put this in place and then do this? Can we, for example, under lines 2.5 through 2.18, get a better handle through whatever means about how we do this, so that when we bring this stuff forward, we know how we're going to do this, instead of kind of going on an expedition and saying, well, we'd like to have this, so kind of figure it out. And then down at the bottom it says the commissioner must report to the chairs if for some reason these aren't going to be included in the initial emissions reporting system. Commissioner's got to get back to the chairs of the ranking committees and then figure out how they're going to do it. It's putting the cart before the horse. That's my point. That's where I was using the term preemptive. Yes, the state cannot preempt federal government. That's precisely why I don't think we need this.
Well, what you need to do is you need to read a new book by E.O. Wilson called Consilience, and it talks about the economics of technology, economics, politics, and ethics. And this is an example of a bill that deals with the issue of consilience. I'm trying to work that into a bill somewhere.
Are you offering that as an amendment?
Since I just learned it, but I'm not going to put it into this bill.
Mr. Chair, Representative
Knuth.
E.O. Wilson is perhaps one of my greatest heroes, although I don't really appreciate a lot of the ideas in that book as much as his other one.
Seeing no further discussion, do you have anyone else who you wish to have testify today, Representative? Anyone who wishes to testify for or against the bill? Seeing none, then I'll renew my motion that House File 774 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Finance Committee. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay.
No.
Motion prevails.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
We're going to move to Senate File 261. Representative Jackson actually was here at the beginning of the hearing, and I didn't see her. I would have jumped to that. So we'll move to number 8 on the agenda. She's here. Oh, yeah, I said she was, and I didn't see her at the beginning, or we would have moved to her right away, since she was here when we actually started at 8:30.
Mr. Chair, do you want me to move the Senate committee report?
Representative Nelson.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move the subcommittee report on House File 261.
Representative Nelson moves the division report. Any discussion? Seeing no discussion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Representative Nelson.
I'd like to move Senate File 261 to be passed and recommended to be passed and moved to the General Register.
All right. Your bill's before us. Representative Jackson.
Thank you. Thank you, Committee and Mr. Chairman. This is essentially a housekeeping bill that cleans up and clarifies several items that were missed last time around before I was in the legislature.
Yes.
It's clearly in sections, including the transfer on death deeds. I've got Kevin Dunleavy here with me to to answer any questions that I'm not able to, but I would welcome any questions, and I won't take your time going over it except to the extent that you've got questions about it.
All right. Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chair, my name is Kevin Dunleavy, and I co-chair the Legislative Committee of the Real Property Section of the State Bar Association.
And to the bill, or the Senate file. You want to just walk us through it quickly and tell us what...
Article 1 is a cleanup on the transfer on death deeds that was passed by the last legislature, and this is primarily requested by the county auditor so that they have a tax address to send a tax statement to when the affidavits are recorded. That's when the title transfer occurs, when the affidavit of survivorship is recorded. That's pretty much all that Article 1 does. Article 2 is common element certificates. That extends the benefits of common element certificates to planned unit developments and cooperatives. Previously, it was just condominiums that were able to use common element certificates. That's for Torrance property. Article 3, this is a codification of existing practice of the Department of Revenue that certificates of real estate value are not required for a designated transfer. A designated transfer is I'm the sole owner of an LLC or a corporation, and I'm the sole owner of the property. I'm transferring the property to that entity. There's no change in the beneficial ownership, and so the Department of Revenue doesn't consider that to be an arm's length transaction for the purposes of comparable assessments. So this just codifies the practice that you don't need to file a certificate of real estate value for that type of transfer. Section 3 is probably the part of this bill that this committee would be most interested in, and that is 2 years ago, the legislature granted municipalities the ability to use cartways in order to provide access to landlocked property. And unfortunately, the legislature didn't approve a procedure. It gave the procedure that the township previously had the ability. What this does is grants the cities the ability to use the township procedure for creating these cartways. And the main question I get on that is, could you put in a strip mall using one of these things? And the answer is no. These roads are 33 feet wide, so it's only wide enough for a residential property, not for a commercial property. Section 4, real property transactions on behalf of entities. That's entities don't die like individuals do, so this eliminates the need for an affidavit stating that the principal hasn't died when using a power of attorney. That's it.
Questions? Seeing no questions, George Samuel.
I renew my motion that our Senate file 261 be passed and referred to the general register.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye. Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative.
Thank you.
Representative Swales is there and ready to go, so let's. Senate file 423. Representative Swales, I will move that Senate file 423 be recommended to pass and be placed on the general register. To your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This is just a simple adjustment to laws pertaining to the Campaign Finance Board. It has to do with the way we look at necessary utensils, paper plates, cups, plastic forks and spoons. Those are counted as a campaign expense, so they should really be, according to my campaign, counted as non-campaign money. So I have with me Mr. Gary Goldsmith from the Campaign Finance Board, who would probably like to speak to this.
Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. My name is Gary Goldsmith. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Campaign Finance and Public Disclosure Board. The board reviewed this bill as it went through the Senate. I'm familiar with its contents. The bill is clear. With respect to its intent, it would pose no problems for the board to implement. There would be no cost or fiscal impact. This essentially eliminates an inconsistency in an existing non-campaign disbursement. Food, beverage, entertainment, facility rental, and so on are already non-campaign disbursements when used for fundraisers. Unfortunately, the paper plates, paper cups, plastic tablecloths, and so on are not included in the current language, and this would remedy that problem and essentially eliminate a potential trap for a treasurer who isn't keenly aware of the nature non-campaign disbursement.
Representative, there's an amendment, the A1 amendment. Does that need to go on at this point?
I believe that Representative Sterner is the author of this amendment.
Representative Sterner, you want to explain your amendment?
Sure. Thank you, Chair. Representative Swales. I had a bill that was 2164, and it kind of dealt with some of the same issues with the non-campaign expenditures and fees such as like PayPal you get online that are should be non-campaign expenditures. I thought this would be a good addition, amendment to the bill, since it's very narrow and focused on the same kind of issue that Representative Swales was talking about with the utensils.
Mr. Goldson, to the amendment, you want to react to the amendment?
Certainly, Mr. Chair, members, I had reviewed this language in the form of a bill, so it's not new to me. This arises from a situation that's developing with the broader and broader use of the Internet. As the representative states, it's particularly true with PayPal, although there are a variety of other services that will process credit cards online and charge you a per transaction fee and typically a percentage fee as well. While the board has held that bank service charges are already a non-campaign disbursement because you're required to have a checking account, so that's mandated by the statute, it was the board's opinion that the cost of credit card processing fees, such as PayPal or a direct Visa or other similar fee, would not be a non-campaign disbursement. This would clarify the legislature's intent with that respect. Again, it would have no fiscal impact on the board, and we would have no problem implementing it.
Representative Stern, why don't you officially move your amendment?
Thank you, Chair. I'd like to move the amendment, the SO-423A1 amendment, onto the Senate file number 423 under the bill, and I think you have a copy in front of you, but it's as written.
Discussion to the amendment. Any discussion? Seeing no discussion. All those in favor of the amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Representative Swales, to your bill as amended.
Well, I would simply urge the members to vote in favor of this. I think it would make the life of our treasurers much more simple in terms of their accounting.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Swales, thank you for bringing this forward. It brought to mind visions of, I wonder how we managed at our fundraisers in the past to eat and still stay within the law. So thank you very much for this.
I have some sharp
people. Representative Swales.
I have some sharp people in my campaign, Mr. Chair.
Any further discussion? Anyone else wish to testify? Seeing none, I'll renew my motion that Senate File 423, as amended, be recommended to pass and be placed on the General Register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And now we're back at the beginning. House File 938. Representative Brandon. Welcome to the committee.
I will move
that House File 938 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Finance Committee. To your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And there is the A9 amendment. You could start there. That would get it into a form that's
comparable. All right. There's an A09-179 amendment, and you need this amendment to go on to put the bill in proper order. I'll move the amendment to the amendment. Discussion to the amendment. Why don't you tell us what the amendment is?
Mr. Chair, the amendment would get the House version in line with the Senate version. The amendment is some compromised language that the Office of MMB and the Senate author, Senator Prettner-Solem, arrived at.
Discussion to the amendment. Seeing none, all those in favor of the amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Representative Rennett, chair your bill as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I don't have any testifiers. This issue was brought to me by one of my constituents, Stephen DeHaan, and Mr. Hahn has minor surgery today, so he's not able to drive down from Duluth. Mr. DeHaan is a veteran, and when he goes to make appointments with the vet hospital down here in the cities, he ends up taking anywhere from 6 to 8 hours of sick leave. The drive alone, of course, is 5 hours down and back from Duluth. And we're, I would dare say, one of the more closer Greater Minnesota regional centers. So Mr. DeHaan brought this issue forward to Senator Bretner Solon and myself out of concern not just for that issue, but what we anticipate to be a growing number of veterans that will be returning home from both Afghanistan and Iraq that could potentially have similar issues. He's a state employee, and with the amendment that we just adopted, what this bill would do is if you're down to less than 40 hours of sick leave with permission from the authorizing authority, you would get some additional sick time solely for veteran health issues. And this has been, a fiscal note has been issued. I'm not sure if you've got copies of that or not, but we could get it to you. And it's, I think MMB is here, but I think the number was about $30,000 potentially. There aren't a lot of folks right now. It could be a growing issue, though.
I'm sorry, this is going to the Finance Committee.
Yep, so. Mr. Chair.
All right. Discussion to the bill is amended. Seeing none. And you have no witnesses?
I do not, Mr. Chair.
All right. Then I'll renew my motion that House File 938, as amended, be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Finance Committee. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Thank you,
Mr. Chair.
Representative Pop.
I'd like to move the minutes of Thursday, March 26, 2009.
Any discussion? Seeing no discussion. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Meeting is adjourned.